Welcome to PwC's Accounting Podcast Series. Our mission is to inform and educate accountants and other stakeholders on today's most important accounting issues. I'm Heather Horn, a partner in PwC's national office and the host of this series. Today, you're listening to a special, hot-off-the-press episode of what's taken place over the past few days at the AICPA Conference on Current SEC and PCAOB Developments. If you weren't able to follow it, and are concerned about what you may have missed, we have you covered because joining me in the studio are Val Wieman and Ryan Spencer, both partners in our national office. I'm expecting some exciting insights, so let's not waste any more time and hear what happened. Val, Ryan, thanks for joining me to talk about the AICPA National Conference on Current SEC and PCAOB Developments. And I'm actually very excited to be having this podcast. I know in the past we've done a published in-depth, but this is actually going to be issued tomorrow, and it's going to be hot off the presses
as
for our listeners.
As real time as we can get
it. Exactly, as real time as we can get it. So before, though, we get into the specific messages that we want to share with our audience, I thought it might be helpful to actually provide a little background on the conference, especially as some of our listeners might not be as familiar. So Val, can you kick things off by giving us an overview?
Sure. It's, you know, an annual conference. It's hosted by the AICPA, and it's primarily focused on financial reporting, and I mean that kind of in the broadest sense, not just the financial statements, but all communications to investors. You have speeches, panels, there are representatives from regulators like the SEC and the PCAOB, standard setters, both the FASB and the ISB have panels and presentations. And then it includes a variety of sessions on other topics that vary year to year. So you have the views of preparers, directors, there's usually a securities lawyer or two thrown in there, as well as obviously a lot of auditors. And then from an attendance standpoint, it's, if you've ever been to it in person, there's over 2,000 accountants.
It's huge. I didn't realize it was that big.
It's enormous. And it's primarily preparers, you know, both public and private. But it's people who are really dedicated to this conference year over year. So as you mentioned, we just finished it. So it runs for 3 days. This year is from the 9th to the 11th and actually ended just a few hours ago.
Wow. And then you're saying 2,000 in person and then people can also live stream. So it's actually much bigger.
Correct. So I think there are live streams on the West Coast as well as in New York.
Wow. Okay, great. So then that's very helpful background. Why don't we start things off by talking about any broad themes that we saw from the conference? So Val, I'll go back to you for that one too.
Great. You know, I've been to the conference probably for the last 10 or more years, and it feels like it actually used to be a little bit easier to say this was the theme.
Mm-hmm.
But sort of as it's evolved, you now have 3 days of, you know, 23 different sessions.
That's a lot.
So an overall perspective. But I think they've kind of settled down. It's been the same theme for the last couple of years, which is kind of broad perspective on current developments, but really more about collaboration and transparency. So I think it's every presenter and panelist mentioned some form of outreach, whether it was the standard setters doing outreach or soliciting input, or the preparers talking with the SEC or their auditors, the PCAOB doing more outreach to audit committee chairs. I think everyone has to work together to generate that quality financial reporting. And I just think that's the consistent theme that we've seen over the last couple of years.
Well, and that goes together with the whole concept of the financial reporting ecosystem, right?
Yeah, Val, I agree with you. You mentioned transparency. I think that came out in a number of the sessions that I saw as well. There was a lot of focus, interestingly, on the financial statements, but I think there was also a message that decision useful information for investors just doesn't come from the core financial statements. So presenters spoke to the earnings release, changes in the auditor's reporting model, the audit committee report in the proxy, non-GAAP information, and there was even a fair amount of discussion on ESG reporting or environmental, social, and governance disclosures. So the population of information investors are getting is coming to a large degree outside of the financial statements, and that really was a theme that cut across a lot of the sessions. As it relates to transparency, you know, one of the things that I noticed is that the SEC staff also mentioned that they have been performing so-called spot reviews to assess the sufficiency of disclosures related to cybersecurity, Brexit, the LIBOR transition, as well as sustainability. Really just to determine whether additional guidance is needed to help preparers avoid generic disclosure and ensure that they're adequately disclosing the risks related to their companies.
Yeah, it's interesting. And actually, in a way, nice to hear, because that's been a theme we've covered a little in past podcasts and webcasts, that though it's very important to be covering those topics, and maybe even if you don't have all of the information, to disclose what you do know, and then disclosures can evolve over time. All right, so then why don't we move on into some specific topics, starting with the FASB and the standard setting update. So Val, what can you share with us about that?
There were presentations from both the staff at the FASB as well as Russ Golden. He mentioned, I think this was his 12th or 13th conference.
Wow.
And actually his last, because his term as chair of the FASB will expire in June. And what they really focused on was the status and timeline of their projects, which is pretty consistent with what's posted on their websites. They hope to issue the final guidance on reference rate reform, so the phase-out of LIBOR. That's the FASB guidance that will make it easier to change reference rates and make related decisions when LIBOR is phased out at the end of 2021. And new for the FASB, this relief will actually expire, so it can only be used until 2022.
Ah, interesting. And
so they stress that it's really not intended to be open season to renegotiate a lot of contracts, but that if change was directly due to the change in reference rate, that it will allow some relief from what could otherwise be a material implication. And I think a key point here is that Chair Jay Clayton of the SEC, he mentioned expressly that he thinks the effort needed to phase away from LIBOR has probably been grossly underestimated. So I think I'd encourage all of our listeners to start looking at the impact of contracts.
Yes, and I know, as you know, we recently issued an In the Loop that talks about some of the implications, and definitely something I would encourage people to look at because it summarizes the business issues. Because I think what's interesting, particularly about LIBOR, on the surface, it seems, oh, this is just yet another accounting issue, but it's far beyond that because it could be prevalent. You know, these contracts.
And that's what they spoke
prevalent.
About, how pervasive it can be.
Right, exactly.
So also in the near term, they expect to finalize the liabilities and equity project. So Russ wanted to make sure that that got done before his term expires next year. Further out, they spoke about the, I think they called them lively roundtables that they held last month on the possible changes to the accounting for goodwill. So that's the possibility of amortizing instead of the current impairment model. And there'll be more discussion on that, obviously, next year as that topic develops.
So do they give any sense of direction, or just to say
they really
more
didn't.
To come?
I think it's more to come, and I think there are some very passionate people on both sides of
yes,
that argument.
Yes, very much so.
And then they did speak about their segment and financial reporting model projects, which they consider to be related. Both are in the research phase. They recently completed a study on segment disclosures, which follows last year's study on segment aggregation. And the financial reporting model is looking at new ways to reflect the performance statement or the income statement. So more to come on both of those, but those could have a significant impact on sort of financial reporting.
Right, and that's, I think in particular, that segment project is of interest to investors because I think there's a sense that there's so much more information out there and should they be looking at some of it. So
exactly.
That'll be interesting to see where they go with that.
And maybe last I'll mention is the extension of the effective dates for some of the recent standards for CISA, leases, insurance, and hedging. Instead of the details of the extension, what I want to focus on is kind of the new model that the FASB has developed. That's that two-bucket approach. So public business entities, except for smaller reporting companies, and that's as defined by the SEC, would be the first to adopt. And then the smaller reporting companies with all of the other entities would adopt in sort of that second bucket, and generally 2 years later. Currently, a lot of the standards have a one-year lag, but they spoke about the need potentially to have 2 years to allow those smaller companies to really leverage the adoption of the larger companies and to make a more effective transition for them.
Yeah, I think that's obviously been very well received and very helpful for those companies. So then, Ryan, let's turn to the SEC. I know the SEC had a few sessions. So are there any themes that you saw coming out of those?
Yeah, sure, Heather. So just first, when the SEC comes at a conference, there's remarks or sessions that are held by the Office of Chief Accountant, the Division of Corporation Finance, as well as the Division of Enforcement. Most of the topics that I'm going to discuss today were related to areas around rulemaking, disclosure and comment letter trends, as well as some of the accounting matters from a preclearance perspective.
So it sounds like all topics that will be of great interest to our listeners. So
I think so.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to start a little bit with some of the proposed rules that are out there and some of the discussion that occurred at the conference regarding those. In late November, the SEC released its regulatory flexibility agenda, which sets forth the projects that the commission intends to accomplish over the next year. So included on the agenda were final rules related to Rule 310, as well as Rule 305, rules that we have discussed in prior webcasts or podcasts.
Yep.
So with that in mind, The director of the Division of Corporation Finance, Bill Hinman, made some remarks about the status of these rules. It's a question we get often.
Yes, all the time.
And really the only thing we have to go off of is what the flexibility agenda is and what remarks are made. So Rule 305 is the rule around disclosures around acquisitions and dispositions of businesses. And in that, the director talked about the impact of that, the fact that they're working to make the rules easier to comply with, and an area where they grant a lot of waiver relief in this area. So the director mentioned that there were a number of good comments that came in, comments that they're working through in determining which amendments should be made to the proposed rule and considering the final rule. And they did mention specifically that they're pivoting a little bit on this concept we spoke about before around management's adjustments, which are some pro forma adjustments that were required in the proposed rule around synergies. And they mentioned they were going to pivot off of that based on some of the feedback that they received from stakeholders there. So it'll be interesting to see where that lands. The other rule that we've talked about before is Rule 310, which is disclosures around guarantors of securities and the voluminous amount of financial information that's required in some circumstances. And so in that discussion, the director talked about really just the overall objective there is to continue to review the comments, work to finalize the rule. Also really that the underlying goal here is to really make the rules in 310 less burdensome and attracting more capital into the registered markets to afford that investor protection.
So then, Ryan, did they give a sense of timing, or they just said we're working to finalize?
No sense of timing.
Okay, and then just to remind our listeners, typically with these SEC rules, then they become effective a certain number of days after they get posted to the Federal Register?
Yeah, it depends on facts and circumstances. Some of the more recent amendments to the rules have been 60 days since they posted. We don't always know when they're going to post
it. Yeah, so it's hard to say.
Very hard to tell. Yeah. But again, they did indicate in their agenda that that's something they intend to accomplish.
So then let's move on then to comment letter trends. What did always of interest? So what did we hear there?
Sure. So there was some specific discussion around MD&A disclosures in the comment letter trends. Specifically, there was one area where there was a somewhat robust discussion around supply chain finance programs. We hear the term structured payable arrangements sometimes, but these are structured arrangements to extend out the timing of payment of accounts payable. And the specific discussion that the SEC staff had was just around the disclosures in MD&A that are required if there's a material impact on liquidity. So when they talked about this, they mentioned that there are situations where they become aware that companies do have these structured payable arrangements and discuss that if it does have a material effect on liquidity or the timing of cash flows, that it isn't important. And in that regard, they did talk a lot about the types of disclosure that might be important in that area, such as the details of the program, some of the key terms, benefits, and guarantees that might be in that arrangement. The other area that does always get a fair amount of discussion at the conference is non-GAAP measures. And specifically in this area, they talked a lot about trends around non-GAAP measures associated with the impact of new accounting standards. So specifically in this discussion, it was mentioned that non-GAAP adjustments, for example, related to the impact of the adoption of CECL, they communicated their view that that would generally not be appropriate as it relates to that standard. Additionally, most calendar registrants are in their second year of the revenue recognition adoption. So there was some discussion there about companies having non-GAAP disclosures around the impact of the adoption or presenting revenue in the second year as what it would have been under 605. And again, this was something that the staff indicated that they wouldn't expect that would be an area where companies should be making non-GAAP adjustments.
Interesting.
I mentioned lastly pre-clearance technical items. So again, there's a fair amount of detail that they go through when going through these very fact-specific patterns. And in that situation, they do talk a lot about the themes that they see, really to kind of give a sense of what is the level of pre-clearance activity and what are the types of things that they're dealing with. So in the case of revenue, they talked about principal versus agent.
Oh, we get a lot of questions. We've been getting a lot of questions on that.
Right. They talked about questions around identifying the performance obligations in revenue arrangements, as well as determining the primary beneficiary in variable interest entities, as well as the equity method of accounting questions. So those speeches and all the details are available on the SEC's website, but it's a good reminder about how the SEC staff continues to indicate that they're open to discuss these in the interest of collaborations and timely reporting.
In the show notes, we'll have a link over to that. So if people want to look at specific speeches, they can do that. All right, why don't we move on to our next topic then? And I know those two answers were split between Val does more falling of the FASB, Ryan falls SEC. But my next topic is PCAOB. So I'll open it to both of you in terms of what you heard in the PCAOB remarks.
Yeah, sure, Heather. I'll start with Cam. So it was definitely a topic that was mentioned in a lot of different sessions. And in fact, there was a specific session addressing CAMs. So CAMs are critical audit matters. One of the key themes I got out of it was that CAMs are not inherently positive or negative. They're a means of communicating certain information, which presumably the company's already disclosed as being a critical area. So I think the SEC and the PCAOB will be focused on these disclosures as they show up in more audit opinions this year end. The PCAOB has also highlighted that they've already performed targeted inspections of CAMs this year, and as a result, they do not feel that significant changes to the existing guidance are warranted at this time. And they issued, interestingly, they issued a spotlight on their observations on December 10th.
Yeah, actually, this is interesting. We had our quarterly webcast, and we included that. And we definitely will include a link to the report in the show notes, because there is some very interesting information. I think that year-end companies would benefit from taking a look just to get some benchmarking of what's happened with the companies that had to adopt earlier. Val, how about, what was your perspective?
I think what's interesting is the sessions on the PCAOB, and I know we have a wide audience of sort of public accountants and then companies, but I think it's important that even though the PCAOB is the auditor's regulator, that companies should really understand what the PCAOB expects as a focus area for next year. So they had the normal sessions on enforcement, inspection process, but they also tip their hand to where they're going to be focusing as they inspect audits in the coming year. So at the conference, the PCAOB said that their 2020 inspection cycle is going to focus on larger issuers with higher market cap. And then they're going to focus on areas where the PCAOB has found deficiencies in the past. And that includes revenue recognition and ICFR, internal control over financial reporting. Also, independence, the importance of which was mentioned by several presenters. And the implementation of new standards. So if you look at the timing, presumably leases in the current year. They also spoke about wanting to address cybersecurity and digital assets with a focus on understanding the processes and the transactions and how, specific to the digital assets, the ownership rights and valuations are assessed for potential fraud. There was a panel on digital assets at the conference, and they mentioned that it's ongoing difficulty and really how to get comfort in the auditing in these areas.
Yeah, accounting too.
Yeah. actually, I think they mentioned that on the panel from Corporation Finance as well, the digital asset.
Yeah. Account.
So in the same vein, I also think it's good for management to understand the new PCAOB standards on auditing of estimates and the auditor's use of specialists. These are auditing standards, but from management standpoint, they should be aware of how the auditors may need to modify their audit approach, which may require, you know, different information or additional questions or a broader scope than maybe they've had in the past. So earlier in December, we actually issued two in-depths. So our publications meant for management to explain each standard and to give management sort of an overview of the requirements.
Yeah, it's interesting, Val, and even the CAMS kind of goes with this. I think people do think of the PCAOB as sort of that's the audit firm's problem, but because what they're doing impacts what the audit firms are doing, it is important for managements to understand, and often the PCAOB is interested in management's point of view as well when they put out, you know, their request for comment, et cetera. So it is an area where I think it's helpful for companies to at least keep an eye on what's going on there.
And I mentioned it earlier, but the PCAOB is actually doing more proactive engagement with companies for the audits that they're selecting. So they mentioned that in the past they met with maybe 10% of the audit committee chairs of those companies, and this year they met with, you know, 100%, so almost 400 audit committees. So it's that level of engagement, and where the PCAOB believes that the company needs to be engaged in this as well.
Good. Very helpful. So then, just before we wrap up, any other themes or sessions of interest?
Maybe I'll mention a couple of the other panels. There was a session on engaging audit committees that was focused on communication, highlighting how important it is for the audit committees to develop an independent relationship with the auditors that doesn't just go through management. They also highlighted the need to allow sufficient time for the audit committee to understand and evaluate facts and critical issues. And I think that's good advice for management when they're scheduling these meetings. There was a panel of public company CFOs where they spoke about kind of their critical business decisions and how they best leverage internal and external data for combining for that decision useful information that they're providing to investors. Regulators, standard setters, and registrants, auditors, they all commented on blockchain and digital assets and the implications for the accounting and auditing. We mentioned earlier that the SEC was focused on that as well. The AICPA actually mentioned that they plan to release some non-authoritative guidance, an accounting paper with some Q&A on the challenges faced to serve as basically a framework for auditors, which is what Bill Hinman, the director at the SEC, mentioned that he's wholly supportive of. He thinks that they've come up with some guidance from the SEC on how to determine if digital assets are covered or not covered by the securities law, but that really the accounting needs some additional help.
All right. So both Ryan and Val, really appreciate you sticking around the studio this afternoon to run through this. I think it's going to be great to get such timely information out to our audience. So thank you.
You're welcome.
You're welcome.
Please join me here again next week for our last episode of 2019. What a year it's been. I hope that before you kick back into the last days of the decade, you'll tune in one last time for a topic I know you'll appreciate. As many of you are aware, I also host our quarterly accounting and reporting developments webcast. That webcast aired live yesterday, and similar to last quarter, I had a few of my guests stay in the studio after the webcast to record a special episode of the podcast series. We had a lot of fun addressing some of the questions received during the webcast. So please join me here again next week to hear our discussion on leases, taxes, and more. To make sure you catch next week's episode, subscribe to our podcast series wherever you find your content. And I'd love to hear from you. So please reach out to me on LinkedIn with questions, suggestions, or just to follow me to stay up on the latest content. For PwC, I'm Heather Horn. Thanks for tuning in.
This podcast is brought to you by PwC, all rights reserved. PwC refers to the U.S. member firm or one of its subsidiaries or affiliates, and may sometimes refer to the PwC network. Each member firm is a separate legal entity. Please see www.pwc.com/structure for further details. This podcast is for general information purposes only and should not be used as a substitute for consultation with professional advisors.